listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, can do, will do, and you must do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must be done, you will get it done. And you'll do it safely. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. To drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Another way you can do it, which is fairly easy, just go to babaoshi.net. Baba, B-A-B-A-O-S-H-I .net, babaoshi.net. And then there, those programs will be right there for you. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, from all times they're going to give our Eastern times. From 6 to 8 on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Itaki Kamban. And then, from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. I tuned in last night, and had a great discussion, lively discussion. I didn't participate. I just wanted to listen. And my good sister, Sister Benisiwa Ayan, and many others, giving good perspectives. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report, Wednesdays, every Wednesday at from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Black Farmers Report. That's this evening. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. They have these prepackaged things that you can buy with the laundry detergents, the toothbrushes, a number of things in there. I can't remember what the cost is, but if you buy those, they'll be delivered free. And other ways they're trying to make sure that, hey, support us, support one another. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba has been taking our people to the motherland for many years. Over 450 of our people have traveled with him to the motherland. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brothers and sisters, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Yes, some trips upcoming. Has one to Tanzania next month, November 18th through the 29th. They were raised by $100. They were $3,700, not at $3,800. So, and then to Ghana, December 24th to January 5th, 2022. And then to Senegal and Gambia, April 1st to April 11th, 2022. And then to Ghana, May 24th to June 5th, 2022. For $3,700. Everything is right there on the website. All the things that you need, all the information you need. For shots and medications and visas and all of that. Right there. And if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans. HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Their mission is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. HabashahIncorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, go online and check it out. You'll see the great pictures with the Kashi Project that is going on in Africa. The programs that they have here, the many programs that they have here in the States, the Habashah Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. Check out HabashahIncorporated.org. The LEDGE Program. LEDGE stands for the Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE Program. Brothers and sisters, become a member of the LEDGE Group. They work on the continent, securing the four main things for human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They're in 12 countries. They're in 12 projects in six countries, and over 172 employed with over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, become a member of the LEDGE Group. In fact, membership has its privileges. You have the opportunity to buy land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. You can buy an acre of land in Tanzania. I know. Fundamental. The LEDGE Group. Pibiatumi. A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I. Pibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to Pibiatumi.com. Make it your web destination for all your information. Pibiatumi.com. Homeland Village in Macon, Georgia. Homeland Village, the cultural shop where they believe Africa must and will unite. They sell all kinds of products and furniture and clothing and books. Tuesday through Sunday from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Give Brother Abijah a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. The African Cultural Center, Motherland, Homeland Village. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in the Atlanta area on Ralph David Abernathy. Across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna is Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Delicious smoothies and vitality drinks and wraps and all kinds of good stuff. They have a vegan dishes on the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. She has a beautiful place. I'm quite sure she has the book that you're looking for. In fact, my grandson was looking for a book. He didn't think she had it, so didn't even ask. So when I saw him at the mall, snatched him up. You got this book? There it is. She had it. See? So the fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, figurines, T-shirts, you name it, they have it at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, Brother Gazemdi Ajamu. They had this past weekend a Founders Day on Saturday, and then they had the program for Haiti on Sunday.
and it went well. And they're going to tell us how much they raised, because they want to, you know, to me, that's the best part about us. If we own the one, if we're asking for money, we'll say, this is how much we raised, and this is how much is going to go to the cause that you gave to. Because that's how it should be. That's how it should be. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Give my good friend, Brother Gazimde Ajamu, a call at 519-404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us lifting us. They have the Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night at 9 o'clock from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us lifting us. And but if you want to call to listen or call because you have a question or comment or concern, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, give my sister Shelly Amonsetta a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay-Haiti. Sister Gabriella Aurelia is doing great work with our young people on the island of Haiti, in the northeastern part of the island of Haiti. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I .org. Sanjay dash Haiti. Check it out. Those beautiful children in their school clothes. In fact, it's all about education, healthcare, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. And they're doing great work. Check them out. Ackerman Institute, Baba Barudi and Mama Yah. I know that I think the next thing that they have coming up is the Kibuka, which is very deep, very spiritual. And you'll have more about that as it approaches. But they always are seeking help because they get no money from us. But of course, the work that they're doing is raising warriors, raising the men and young women that we need. So, brothers and sisters, make your check and money order out to Ackerman Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. You want to use Cash App or PayPal? Say you want to use the Cash App? Sure. Put in the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Barudi, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your donations. Hopefully you can make them monthly. Be a great help. Baba Barudi is a prolific writer. He has books. So if you want to check out the books he has, go to AckermanHouse.com. AckermanHouse.com is a fine array of books for your reading pleasure. Just definitely to elevate your mind. That's right. This is all about the mind. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. September. October 5th. In a warrior's mind, fear begets fearlessness. Struggle solidifies strength. Faith forges fortitude. After purpose follows play. After pain arises peace. And after suffering comes sovereignty. Mawali Mu, KK Shabazz. Spirit suppresses all we see about us at any particular point in this dimensions we call time. Bearing this in mind, we must always spiritually configure our minds relative to what we see as quantitative and qualitative advantages and disadvantages along the warrior's line. It is important for enemies to make warriors believe that we are at a disadvantage in terms of numbers and the potential for victory based on reported trends in general levels of consciousness. It is the business of enemies to prevent any our historical insight, which will lead credibility to our viability. This will enable them to keep us singularly focused on this particularly demoralizing moment in time. We have been and will always be the warrior majority. Since our beginning, the vast majority of Africans on this planet have been warriors. The vast majority of us have sought to gain and maintain liberation, empowerment, and sovereignty for our people. Our current situation should not confuse us on the fact that it should be the only measuring rod of the state of our own, of our front line. It cannot be limited to this moment in the ongoing war. A movement is more than a moment. A movement is more than a moment. It is part of a continuum. Therefore, in counsel to warriors, know that your power and ability to produce change in whatever direction you choose is based on your interpretation of our historical reality, and self has an intergenerational force in it. Your movement, your motivation, your possibilities are all determined by your vision and knowledge of the past. Affirm, I see the reason in my pain and embrace it in a purposeful way. Affirm, I see the reason in my pain and embrace it as in a purposeful way. Okay, I can't pronounce it. It's a tongue twister for me, y'all. October 6th. Fearlessness requires total trust in your creator. Jacqueline D. Harris. It should go without saying that consistently being diligent, generous, concerned, humble, communally individualistic, dependable, honest, other admiring, clear-sighted, are historically grounded, loyal, complementarity committed, weaponized, optimistic, and visionary are all qualities becoming of warriors. In Yorugu sanity, this speaks to a spirit and mentality of creative visionary fearlessness. These are all qualities which require one to stand where and in ways others do dare not. Obviously, at the same time, there are oppositional qualities to these. Correspondingly listed, consistently being lazy, selfish, inconsiderate, arrogant, extremely individualistic, unreliable, a liar, jealous, menticidal, ahistorical, treasonous, complementarity, immature, disingenuous, defenseless, pessimistic, and myopic are all qualities unbecoming of warriors. These qualities are readily exhibited by Africans broken by Yorugu's reality. They speak to lives abided in constant fear of a trepidation, frozen in white light of Yorugu's xenophobic hatred of all that is greater than them. Affirm, I am fearless. Affirm, I am fearless. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Baba Barudi will be my guest. I'm going to be off for a while. I will not be here on Friday and all next week. But the Monday, the 18th, October 18th, Baba Barudi will be my guest. And then he will also be my guest the following Monday, the 25th. So I'm truly feeling blessed. I have two programs with Baba Barudi. And so I'm thankful in that regard. And I'll mention it again before I go off. But let me see what I'm going to talk about. I got come on now. See, you be messing with me. You be messing with me, man. I tell you. So let me first go here. Because, you know, I'm telling you, this is a deep quote, y'all. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. There is no other historical instance of a former captive, a former slave. People who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned, where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. I tell you, that's deep, ain't it, y'all? That's deep. That's deep. Yeah. This is what Lord Carnarvon said. I got a guest, Brother Mickey Dean. I'm having him on in a minute. Let me finish with this piece I'm going through right now. This is what Lord Macaulay, his address to the British Parliament. I have traveled across the length and breadth of Africa, and I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people in such caliber that I do not think we would ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is her spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system and her culture. For if the Africans think that all that is foreign and British is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them to become, a truly dominated nation. I mean, I tell you, every time I read that, I just get angry. Every time I read that, I get angry. All of these, every time I read them, I get angry. Because it's ridiculous. It really is. It's ridiculous. You know? Every time I read them, I get angry. Here is a piece that Kwame Nkrumah. Where is that at? Did I go past it? I might have done that. You know, this is what Kwame Nkrumah said at the speech of freedom. When Nkrumah, he had gotten freedom. They broke from Britain. And of course, this breaking from Britain was the light for all the other countries on the continent. And Kwame Nkrumah was a staunch Pan-Africanist. And he said, I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for humanity, for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on the hope, trust, and friendship, and dedicated to the good of all mankind. Some years later, this is what Kwame Nkrumah said. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effects that the European has had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts, so to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans, that is demanded, and this is demanded by an African-centered view. Because why? We are Africans. And because the future towards which the European leads us is genocide. It's genocide. I have a guess. That guess is Brother Mickey Dean out of KC, the United National Black United Front. Brother Mickey, how are you today?
Okay, Brother Oshie, you know my line. I'm doing good for a senior citizen.
All right, keep on doing it then. Keep on doing it, brother.
Yes, always sir. Always glad to be with you, brother.
Oh, man, believe me, you always send me good stuff. You always, it's always something great to talk about and to to share with the listeners. You sent me a piece on Pan-Africanism a few weeks ago, and and you sent Eric Williams, the great Pan-African and leader and politician, author from Trinidad and Tobago, and the brother from the UK. excuse me. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Brother Gehinde Andrews. And I remember seeing him in a piece many years ago and on a panel talking about reparations from the UK. And he was on a panel with some Negro. I tell you, boy, the Europeans got a lot of Negroes that they can throw at us. There's never any shortage of those who are willing to do the bidding for the Caucasians. There's never any shortage. You know,
yeah, and it's been that way throughout our history.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but
Excuse me. I hope that does it. Yeah, you're right. That's been the case, especially in our relationship to them. You know, it's hard to speak about traitors and, you know, those who would be willing to do the bidding of those who have done so much wrong to us, coming out of ancient times, but contemporary times, plenty. There have been those who are willing to round us up, put us on the ships, chain us, whip us, do whatever. On the plantations, those so-called overseers, you know, there are plenty of us. And to me, those people need to be dealt with, you know. Those traitors need to be dealt with. I've often said that, you know, what's good for them is death. Is death.
Because, but you know, Brother Oshie, in addition to the overt traitors, another thing that the ruling class has effectively done is to create a buffer between the masses of black people and the ruling class, people that they, you know, all of the talent that black people have, if we united against our oppression, it would be an unstoppable force. So one of the things that our oppressor has to do is that they have to have a certain amount of our people that are let into the system, that are given a pathway to climb up the ladder, so to speak. To be examples for the rest of us to aspire to. People who support the system, but they may not be, you know, a Clarence Thomas-like, you know, an overt enemy, but they are people who have been allowed to have a comfortable position, and essentially what they will do is defend the system.
Right.
Because they've been allowed a certain amount of comfort and basically tell the rest of us, well, you know, if I could do this, you can do it, not understanding that the system is not designed for everybody to be successful like that.
Right.
So that's the more, I think, I don't know, in a sense, a more dangerous class, in the sense that it gives us this false illusion that it's not the system that is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that some of us just didn't work hard enough, didn't go to school, didn't do all of the things we were supposed to do, and therefore it falls back on us. And so we have to then improve ourselves and quit trying to attack the system. So it's a pernicious type thing, but yeah. it's something that you can see just about all around the world in every society.
And it's sad. It's sad that the European, who's been the master manipulator in all of this, as he has gone around the world, you know, when he came out of that dark age, that medieval age, land poor, resource poor, and people poor, you know, he ain't created nothing. I mean, if there's any information at all going on in Europe, it was the Moors in Western Europe who were the light of Europe at that time until finally hundreds of years later that the European got together and they said, you know what? We make war amongst ourselves, and they do. They are the most warlike people on this planet. They are the most violent-prone people on this planet. And he said, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And that's what they have done. And so they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, Belgium, you name it. And what they have done is taking everybody's stuff that enriched them. Europe is rich. And all the places that they have taken, the indigenous people are poor. You know, they didn't come to share. They didn't come to barter. They didn't come to, no, they just came to take and subjugate and suppress and eliminate. Yeah, go ahead, Maggie. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, as we always say, there's no place on earth where Europeans have gone where the indigenous people are better off now than they were before the Europeans got there. You can just name any place in the world mm-hmm. where Europeans have gone, and they have raped, pillaged, destroyed everywhere. And they continue to do that to this day.
Right. There's no place on this planet. And these are some evil people, but yet because of their ability to manipulate and have control of the narrative, have control of media, control of imagery. So you don't think of them like that. Many people think of Europeans or Caucasians as benevolent, giving, great people, you know, because that's the image they want to perpetuate, just like England. You know, when you see England all the time on television, the royals, and you don't think about how England got into that position. We're a little cold ass place that has no resources, but yet it's booming. The Queen's carriage is just 24 karat gold. You know, all of these things. And yet you don't think about that. You don't think, how did they get this wealth? By taking it, by claiming it, claiming land and said, this is ours, and everything on this land, the people, the resources, the animal, everything is ours, and we will see fit to do whatever we want with it. You know, if we eliminate these people, so be it. In fact, the only places, I mean, the only genocides that have really happened have been done by Europeans against those indigenous people, the Tainos, in what is now Haiti, Dominican Republic. They wiped them out.
Yep.
You know, in Australia, the Truganini and all her people, they wiped them out. You see, that's why I'm saying when people talk about a Holocaust or genocide, the European Jews did not suffer a genocide. They had mass murder, but that was not a genocide. A genocide means those people are totally erased, totally eliminated. And the Europeans have done that. You know, one of the things that Brother Kehinde Andrews says in this article is that all these things have happened, but the only thing that is going to prevent anything from happening in the future and is going to put us on the right track is African unity. It's African unity. And I know that sounds simplistic, and it is, but it's very difficult to achieve because of our minds.
Well, those quotes that you read from our brother Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah, a very instructive. In fact, I always tell people that one book that they must read is Nkrumah's Africa Must Unite, because in that book he basically lays down the ideological foundation of why Africans must unite into a United States of Africa. And basically what he's talking about is a revolutionary United States of Africa, not a bourgeois type neo-colonial United States of Africa. And I think that still has to be the goal today. Another very important book that he wrote was Neocolonialism, the Highest Stage of Imperialism, because what we see now, after direct colonialism, you know, when the Europeans understood that they could not stop these mass movements, then they said, well, you know, what we've got to do is allow for black governance, blacks to govern. We don't want to directly govern anymore, but we have to make sure that those who govern are people that are dependent on us and people who are loyal to us.
Right, who have been trained.
That's the whole concept of neo-colonialism.
Right, those who have been trained
and
by Kruma us.
And Nkrumah saw that also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Those who are trained by us.
And that's basically the state of the continent today. Mm-hmm. The governments of Africa overwhelmingly are neo-colonial governments dependent on and loyal to European powers. And American powers, and more increasingly Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got three entities that are strong on the continent, but even more, you got the Arabs still. You know, you got them. You got the Indians, the Chinese. You know, the Europeans, which of course America is part of that piece. You know, so you have all these entities that are on the continent, and then you have the leadership. So, you know, supposedly of, what did they say, 54 sovereign states. No, they're not 54 sovereign states. There might be 54 states, but they ain't sovereign. They're not free to do what they must do for themselves and their people and their land. No.
You know, with young people, we always try to in our mentor programs, make our young people understand that when you look at a map of Africa, you see Ghana, and you see Zimbabwe, and you see Kenya, et cetera, that these are European creations.
Right.
You know,
right.
At the 1884 Berlin Conference, where they created these artificial boundaries.
That's true.
And just went right down in the middle sometimes of some of the ethnic groups. But they created these boundaries for their own purposes and then gave them, you know, names. Mm-hmm. Like the Gold Coast and Southwest Africa and
or Cameroon
and those kind mm-hmm. of names mm-hmm. and it's really beneficial to those imperialist powers that Africa remains disunited and these single states. You know, I mean, people who've never been to Africa may not understand that in the United States you can go from from Missouri to Kansas, I don't have to present documents, you know, to get into Kansas. Mm-hmm. I don't need a passport, you know. But African states, you know, I can just remember some of the times I've been there, just trying to get from country to country.
Right,
you know, it could be a hassle.
And so
that disunity is advantageous to the European powers, but it's really something that's got to be addressed. And I'm hearing more and more now about movements, particularly among younger Africans, that are beginning to pick up the legacy of Nkrumah and Thomas Sankara and Lumumba and people like that, mm-hmm. who have talked about a unified Africa. We don't hear a lot about that movement, and it may not be a major movement at this time, but it's there. And that's what has to happen. I mean, mm-hmm. Nkrumah was exactly right. That is our salvation, a unified revolution in Africa.
It is. There is nothing other than that. That is it. There is no religion. There is no social program. There is nothing but the independence of Africa to be governed by Africans. That's it. Pan-Africanism.
But the benefit of Africa is, and of course, everything we need is there. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, everything we need for our development is there on the continent. That's why everybody else is there, of course.
That's
right. They're not there for any benevolent purposes. I mean, they're there to extract. Mm-hmm. And you know, we have to understand that. So,
yeah, one brother said about it, if things are not done to correct this, 80 years from now, the year 22nd century, Africa will be depleted. And then what happens to Africans? You know, what happens to us? Africa will be colonized again, particularly by the Chinese. What happens to us? You know, because number one, the Chinese have more people than anybody. So he don't need no people. In fact, when you're Chinese coming to your country to do a project, if you have them do a project, you know, they use their own labor. I've seen it personally in the Bahamas, in Nassau.
We saw it in Tanzania. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see?
And then I was recently in Kenya, and one of the interesting things is that the group that I was traveling with, they had actually sent somebody to the airport to pick me up, but I missed them, and I ended up taking a cab. Mm-hmm. And down to where I was staying, and the cab driver took me a sort of a different route. It was a highway that was being worked on, almost from the airport all the way downtown. And I asked him about it. And he said, "Well, this is the new highway from the airport to downtown." And I said, "Well, who's building it?" He said, "The Chinese."
Yeah.
You know. So what they are doing is that they are providing a lot of infrastructure, mm-hmm. primarily for their own benefit,
right? Later,
also, but also they're providing loans to these African governments that they know that these African governments cannot pay back. And one of the things that we'll probably start seeing is that a lot of the airports, a lot of the ports, mm-hmm. et cetera, a lot of the infrastructure is going to be owned by the Chinese.
Yep, they're going to take them over
because the African governments can't repay those loans. And you're right. They we saw this in Tanzania a few years ago. A lot of Chinese laborers in Africa, and it's really caused a lot of conflict between the Africans also, mm-hmm. because they see this, and of course they're treated very disrespectfully. Mm-hmm. from what I've
in their own country
by the Chinese
in their own country. Right. I mean, you know. The reason this is happening because we have a lack of a cadre of leadership, not individuals, because there are some individuals, but they are not true leaders. They're individuals for themselves, and they're willing to sell to the Chinese the land and resources to benefit themselves, much like the same thing that Mobutu Sese Seko did in the Congo, you know, when it was Zaire and selling off to, you know, to Belgium. You know, we got to get rid of this mentality of despots and neocolonialists and those who are willing to sell our people out. We have to call them out. We have to put in place a cadre of leadership, not one particular charismatic leader, but a cadre of leadership. You know, doesn't necessarily have to be voted on, but it has to be acknowledged as these men and women have the true best interests of the continent, not just, you know, Ghana or Nigeria, you know, or Zimbabwe. They have the continent's interests at heart. They have a vision for the continent that we can, like, and just like you said, Brother Mickey, everything there, we have everything that we need. Only thing that we have to do is do it.
Yeah.
Build the infrastructure, build the roads, build the highways, mm-hmm. build the hospitals, you know, build the ports, the airports. That's all we, you know, it's there.
Yeah. And another instructive book that I mentioned, a lot of times we get asked the question, well, you know, how did this happen? And of course, one of the ways was through force, or as they call it, the fire sticks, when the Europeans came with weapons and guns, et cetera. Another way, though, you know, there's this book called Facing Mount Kenya by Jomo Kenyatta that I've had mm-hmm. this book for about 35 years. And I just read that book, you know, because I was going to Kenya. I said, let me read this book.
Okay.
And one of the things that's really instructive about that book, what it is sort of a sociological view of Kenyan society prior to the Europeans coming and then the effect that the Europeans had. And what you see is that one of the things that the Europeans understand, and I think it's something that you say all the time about controlling the mind of the African, there's a statement mm-hmm. that you make I can't exactly call it right now.
Okay.
But basically, it was very important for them to set up schools to break down the traditional educational process of the continent, to set up their own schools, to denounce African spirituality, and to set up their own religious institutions. And so this starts at a young age. You know, the kids start going to European schools, and they started worshiping European deities, et cetera. So it was a complete process, not only in a military sense, but to capture the minds of the African people, to Europeanize them. That was a very insidious method of capturing Africa also. So it wasn't all just guns, but it was also the educational process, the religious process, et cetera.
Yeah, it's devastating. It really is. And believe me, Brother Mickey, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this program, I try my best to announce that to our people, what has happened, what continues to happen, and what we must do, you know? And I will continue to do that too whenever I expire. Because that's the deal. We're in this, and see, a lot of times because of what has happened, we blame ourselves. We blame the victim. We put blame on ourselves for what happens to us in these countries, in these cities, in these areas, because we kind of say that, you know, or think that we can get ourselves up out of this easily. No. No, you cannot, you know, because you're bombarded 24/7, 365. Everything you watch, everything you read, you know, I mean, they're constantly bombarding you, you know. You know, right now they're doing this thing on critical race theory, you know. And so just recently, let me see, where is that at? Yeah, just recently. I've been seeing this on Facebook for the last couple of weeks, and not just this, but others like it. You know, here's this cat named David Horowitz. David Horowitz has wrote a book. He's supposed to be David Horowitz in the Freedom Center. He says, senseless rioting, looting, and destruction are based on a tsunami of lies. There is no such thing as systematic racism or white supremacy. Best-selling author David Horowitz's new book, I Can't Breathe, exposes the hoax. The hoax. It's a hoax. You know, I Can't Breathe. The truth about the Black Lives Matter martyrs. Let me just read this part here. In this latest salvo in the battle for America's survival, David Horowitz exposes the racial hoax that is spawning riots and dividing the nation. Examining the 26 most notorious cases of police racism, in quotes, from Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, Horowitz demonstrates that Black Lives Matter has lied about every one of those in its quest to undermine law and order and fuel racial hatred and destroy America. In case after case, the lies and myth-making breaks down under Horowitz's scrutiny. Even the chief prosecutor in the George Floyd case was forced to admit that he had no evidence of racial bias, while Breonna Taylor, the longtime accomplice of a major drug dealer, was killed when she and her boyfriend resisted arrest. Unchallenged myths about race and about racist murderers by the police have brought mayhem and crime to our cities, where the victims are predominantly Black, and they are also slandered against the United States. Every time I read this part, Mickey, I'm trying to laugh. They're also a slander against the United States, the least racist country in history.
Yeah, that is laughable.
It is.
But you know what's not funny though is the serious effort that white folks are now embarking on to really change the whole direction of the education process. I mean, here in Missouri, they introduced a bill, and of course, this is happening around the country, but they introduced a bill where they're going to start withholding funds from school districts that teach. And you know, they call everything critical race theory. Most of the folks who talk about that have no idea
what it is. Right? They have no idea.
But basically, they're saying that we have to really change the way that American history is taught. Now, they don't want white kids to feel bad, et cetera. But I mean, this is diabolical, but it's very, very serious. I mean,
it's
these folks control most of these legislatures now. And so it's not just the pressing the vote kind of thing that they're doing. But this attack on education, I was just reading a piece where, I mean, teachers are afraid. Some of them are leaving the profession now. This is really something that's dangerous and serious. Of course, it goes back to the fact that we need our own educational institutions.
That's right.
But right now, you know, most of our children are not in education institutions that are run by us. So it's a very serious matter at this point. But I'm hoping that out of this, you know, our people will begin to understand that these folks don't mean us any good at all.
At all.
You know? And that at some point, we've got to turn towards independent self-determination and doing for self if we intend to survive.
Right. But see, once again, we need the cadre of leadership. We need strong men and women to make that announcement. We don't need no clergy. We don't need no politicians. We don't need no people who got businesses because they're, you know, I understand their self-interest. No, we need brothers and sisters who understand that we as African people, if we're going to survive in the future, we must unite. We must come together and then close ranks. Pull our resources, build our schools, educate our children, do for ourselves. Don't worry about if you're excluding white folks. Hell with that. Yeah, you damn right we're excluding white folks and everybody else who have never meant any good to us. And once we started including them, they began to undermine things. They began to supplant us and take over. No, we're going to do that. We're going to do that for ourselves.
Sister Frances Cress Welsing said, if we don't understand white supremacy, everything else will confuse us.
That's right.
And once you understand how the white ruling class operates, then you cannot be confused about what their intentions are. You know, and Dr. King was something that he finally began to understand about when he said he made this statement about, you know, am I integrating my people into a burning house?
That's right.
I mean, he finally began to understand that all of this whole effort towards love, I mean, this ain't working.
It ain't gonna work.
And if you read even some of Dr. King's later writings, where he talked about the need for a radical redistribution of wealth. And to eliminate militarism, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think that, and of course, that's the part of Dr. King that you rarely
hear because about, that's the part of Dr. King that became dangerous. That's the part of Dr. King when they felt that they had to eliminate him, challenging this country on the Vietnam War, challenging these country on the economic questions and so forth. No, we got to get rid of him now. You know, when he's integrating lunch counters. He's talking about, can we sit on the same toilet seat that you sit on? That's cool. But no, you're talking about the financial situation, equity. In fact, you know, the latest quote I had on the financial situation is that the income disparity is so great. So great. It would take 230 years of white folks, Europeans folks, their money being frozen. It would take 230 years for us to catch up at an incremental level. That's how bad
I read
it is.
That. And most of us don't have that much time.
No. We sure don't, man. Listen, I'm going to.
And that's why, you know, I've got friends who are in the, what do they call it? The DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff, you know. That's all cool. You know, but I'm telling you that if we just continue with affirmative action, integration, include diversity, inclusion, et cetera, I mean, we're not going to make any progress, because we're not putting a dent in the systemic way that this thing is set up. So, And I think we continue to have to push for reparations also.
Definitely.
Reparatory justice, you know.
Well, you know, one thing I saw recently, a brother sent me to me, I didn't get a chance to listen, was ADOS versus Pan-Africanism. And I'm like, are you kidding? Well, you know ADOS, right?
The American descendants of that
organization who wants exclusive reparations for us and nobody else, you know, and that's crazy. And then the other is, of course, Pan-Africanism, which, of course, we are our espouse and is the only thing that is going to save us, as Dr. Clark said, a dynamic Pan-Africanism, which is cultural, technical, and spiritual. We embrace that, you know, things will improve drastically in a minute. Brother Mickey, I'm going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll, you know, open up the phone lines as a number of people are waiting. And have a few things, too, I want to play and talk about, okay?
All right.
All right, my brother. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. John Coltrane with Miles Davis and Chet Baker. And I know my guests like that when I was at Mickey.
Oh, that was Equinox.
That's right.
Equinox is my favorite Coltrane pieces.
That's right. That was Equinox. That's right. Right on, brother. I'm going to play something right now. Why my throat is so scratchy? I'm going to play something right now that I played a few times before. A Caucasian named Howard Nichols. He's giving a talk to some other people, and he's talking about why Africa must remain poor. It is a small segment of a larger discussion that I may play at some time in the future, but I just want to play this little bit and so we can get an understanding about what these people really think and how they really want to maintain the privilege and the grip that they have. This is Howard Nichols. So I want to play this. Excuse me. Yeah. Okay.
Sub-Saharan Africa has been fundamental to the global prosperity of the advanced countries. Okay? And Africa had a role to play. It has a role as a raw material producer. We will not allow Sub-Saharan Africa to escape that. Okay, we do everything to keep Sub-Saharan Africa where it is, also impoverished. It's absolutely vital for the prosperity of everyone else. So let's get clear about that. Okay, and this means all the economic structures, all the global institutions, and the economics we teach everyone is all designed to keep Africa exactly where it is. And whether it is Europe or US or now China, it's always the same. We need Africa to be impoverished because we need those raw materials and we need them dirt cheap. Okay, so that's the message. It doesn't mean to say that there's nothing Africans can do. Of course there is. Okay, but this is the opposition that they're fighting. This is what it's about. Because if Africa does do something different, I assure you living standards of all those in Europe and North America and Asia is going to fall. Okay? And that is a big price to pay. I assure you that the West is not going to allow that without a big fight. Okay? So this is what it's fundamentally about. What I want to show you is how these structures are operating. It's just 20 minutes, so we can't do very much, but just to give you a little bit of an idea. And why I keep the ideology part there is because we are part of the producers of ideology. At universities and academic institutions, we are complicit in this whole enterprise. Okay, so the job of many Western academics is to convince Africans they have to keep doing what they're doing. Okay? And to show them, it's your fault that you're poor. It's not our fault. It's your fault that you're poor. You know? So this is what we do in academic institutions. And I want to show that as well. We just start. This is what it's basically about. So you know what it's about. But I want you just show you the extent to which Africa is specializing in the production of raw materials and basic agricultural goods. We know the basic forces that have caused this underdevelopment. We know it's colonization. I will not discuss that very much because my colleague speaker is going to go into some aspects of this. But I do want to discuss the global economic structures, the global financial institutions, and economic ideology. Briefly, to give you a flavor of those. Let me start with this. You can't really see it so easily, but if those of you are interested, you want the PowerPoint, I'm sure we can make it available to you. But the thing that you really need to see That's the top line. Okay. And the extent of dependency is captured by this statistic at the top. Okay. And you compare it with all other income groups, and what you see is essentially in that one statistic how dependent sub-Saharan Africa is on raw material production. Okay, this is the very heart of what makes sub-Saharan Africa beat. Okay, here, just to have a look at one very important additional statistic, with all this export coming from sub-Saharan Africa, how much does sub-Saharan Africa account for in terms of global trade value? We know there are vast resources coming from there, but look at the bottom line in terms of global trade value. Look at that. 0.5% 1975, 0.95%, going down to 0.1, meaning that with all this vast resources being produced, how much are they getting for it? Nothing. This is a very significant piece of data. Then I just want to show you what has happened to sub-Saharan Africa, because what we know, and from all studies, no country ever develops without manufacturing. Okay, producing raw materials will not take you anywhere. Producing basic agricultural goods will not take you anywhere. And let's have a look at how much manufacturing activity takes place in sub-Saharan Africa. We can look over the last 15, 20 years. And we see manufacturing has actually declined as a percentage of the total. This is percentages of total production in sub-Saharan Africa. How much of it is accounted for by manufacturing? So this figure here is 17% of the total. Most of the rest, when we talk of industry, it includes manufacturing, but the bulk of it is mining. Okay? Raw material extraction. This is the bulk of it. And here we see actually raw material extraction has stayed the same. What has caused industry to fall is the fall in manufacturing production. This is deliberate because we will never, as Western economists, as Western policymakers, we cannot afford to allow Africa to industrialize and start producing manufactures. Okay, so we will do everything to stop that. And I'm going to show you how we actually block that.
Yeah. That's Howard Nichols. You can go on YouTube and put in Howard Nichols. Nicholas, I think it is. Howard Nichols.
Well, I tell you, you can't make it any plainer than that.
No, you can't. You can't. And he's saying it dead. I mean, there's a lot more to that presentation. And one day I'm going to play that on the program. But, I mean, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this program, I try my best to research and bring us the pertinent information that will put something on our minds so now that we can think clearly and think rationally about our situation, and then put all the pettiness, all the bickering, all the BS, all the beats, all that stuff, kick that shit to the curb and come together and do for ourselves. Because, you know, our future is very tenuous. It is not certain. You know, with the mindset of the people we're dealing with, we're dealing with some evil people. As you can hear, they're saying to you, no, I don't want Africa to gain any kind of economic advantage for themselves. I want to keep them poor. I want to keep them begging.
And they've shown what they will do to achieve that purpose. Not only have they, you know, when a leader or a statesman comes along that talks about a unified Africa, like an Nkrumah or Lumumba or Thomas Sankara, they make moves to definitely
to kill
eliminate that.
Yes.
Also, AFRICOM, the African Command, is also a major part. There are American military bases now, or some presence in just about every African country.
Yeah, about every African country.
They made sure that they have a military presence there. They under the guise of one, fighting terrorism, two, training. But AFRICOM is another very insidious force in Africa. I think that was just a very instructive piece of this. I almost was beginning to think, Brother Oshie, that this was an actor. Something that we had produced to be instructive, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what I always think about, Brother Oshie, is what, as we know this, how do we fight against it? How do we organize against it? You know,
right?
And I know, I think it was last year, I participated in a convention of the organization that you turned me on to, that talked about African unity. What was the name of that organization?
The Pan-African Federalist Movement.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you talked about the importance of unity. I'm a longtime member of the National Black United Front. And I know there are other organizations out there that we have a lot, probably a lot more in common than we do differences. And again, I'm hoping the same thing is happening on the African continent as these movements against neocolonialism develop, that sisters and brothers understand that they have more in common than they do differences. And somehow we've got to start putting this stuff together, because, you know, it's one thing to know what we know, but the question becomes, how do we act on it? How do we move on it? How do we unite around it? And that's kind of where I am now. I mean, how do we start pulling people together, pulling this stuff together, especially on the continent, but here in the United States and really throughout the diaspora also.
Exactly.
That's kind of the challenge that we have.
And it's an awesome challenge. But the bottom line, and as they always say, first it begins with the individual purging themselves of all that ignorance, all that superstition, all that belief that the European is God. You know, in fact, excuse me, gosh, I like Duty, Bookman Duty in the Haitian Revolution. Excuse me. I think that did it. And he said, throw off the white man's God and you will be free. Throw off the white man's God. And that's what they did. And they were free. Our problem is that we don't understand that the theology, not just Christianity, but even Islam and others that are not African, what they do to us and how they make us believe and how they make us act. Throw them off. Throw off their politics. Throw off everything. Reject everything that the Caucasian presents to us. Reject it. I know it's difficult. You know? Look what happened in discussing this particular piece right now. When Muammar Gaddafi was going to present a gold coin, the gold dinar, to the continent of how they could use that currency to buy and trade and sell, that's when they knew they had to kill him.
Yep.
That's when all of the propaganda was out about him and doing his people wrong. And this, the people of Libya loved Muammar Gaddafi. The benefits of the oil that was being produced by Libya benefited the people. That's documented. But yet we were fed all that propaganda. You saw on the nightly news, you know, citizens in Libya being beaten and so forth. You saw all kinds of bull. So when they made the move to kill him, in your eyes, it would be justified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be justified.
I was just referencing a book. I know that Noam Chomsky was one of the authors, called Manufacturing Consent.
Yeah,
Manufacturing Consent. And basically, it really delves into how consent in this country is manufactured by the corporate media.
Yes.
Because a lot of times if I'm talking to people, I said, You know, where do you get your information? Because most people don't get information beyond what they see on TV,
right,
what they read in the newspaper, maybe some social media, et cetera. So in other words, it's mainly manufactured news from the corporate media. And I'm talking about even the so-called liberals,
right,
ones like MSNBC, et cetera. I mean, mm-hmm, they're all corporately owned, and they push the same message. You know, the whole thing about two wings of the same bird, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people don't know why they know what they think they know. You know, they really believe
they don't,
that they're
right,
thinking independently.
They do.
But not really realizing that their whole source of information is coming from the corporate media, and it's really a case of manufactured consent.
Right. You are being trained. You are being led. What you think and what you think you know, you don't. You know? So, yeah. And as a consequence, it has a good word here, has deleterious effects on us as a people, because we're not, yeah, thinking clearly. We're not thinking independently. We're not thinking African, you know, we're not thinking African, because we've been ashamed to be African. We're, you know, here it is. These folks are ripping Africa off, as you heard in the last piece. You know, the whole design is to keep Africa so we can continue to take their resources. When he said what the resources, the percentage that they get was 0.1%. Damn. You know, because that's the only thing they're going to pay them.
Straight up robbery.
It is. That's why, to me, if we got ourselves together and we said, hey, we're going to the UN. We're telling them from the UN. And we're going to the African Union. And we're telling them at the African Union, this is the deal. Everybody, we want to kick the Chinese out, kick the Arabs out, kick the Indians out, kick the Europeans out. We have a program that we're going to implement when our program is established. If you want resources from Africa, you will get them at market value. Otherwise, you can't get them. And everything and all the work will be done by everything. And in fact, all the equipment that is there is going to stay there, because there's no doubt about it that you, whatever country, whatever entity, has made billions in over all this time. Now it is our time to reclaim, recapture, and restore ourselves on the continent. I can't say that about the Caribbean. I can't say that about here, because this ain't ours. But if you want to stay here, that's on you. But if you want to go to where we as African people can live and love freely, let's go home. Let's go home. I think there is no other alternative. There's no other choice. It is that's the bottom line. But yet we're afraid.
And I think the
go ahead.
Yeah, and what's his name, Nichols, that we were listening to,
mm-hmm, Howard Nichols.
He made a very good point, and he said basically one of the things that the powers in the West understand is that they cannot let that happen. So we got to understand, you know, what we're up against.
Right.
This ain't nothing that you can sit down and negotiate with these people from a moral standpoint. You know, their survival. Because you remember, he said something to the effect that if this situation changed, then you would see these other societies in the West fall. You know, because of their dependency on continuing to rob Africa, et cetera. So they will do everything in their power to prevent that from happening. And so I think that we have to understand, you know, what we're up against in this.
France made that same declaration about, I don't know, about 10 or so years ago, saying that if Africa became independent, and if African, you know, because they're France still has more so-called colonies or protectorates than any other country, any other European country. France has the most. And if they were eliminated, if they were kicked out, France would become a third world country, you know. And I could give less than a rat's ass what happens to France. Kick their ass out. Kick all of them out. That's where we have to come. That's the mindset that we must have. There is, and in fact, there is no negotiation. When we talk, when you talked about the Berlin Conference of 1884-85, there was no negotiation. There was not one Africa at the table in Berlin, Germany, to negotiate or to talk about or to discuss. There was not one. And so therefore, when we do what we do, there's not going to be one cracker saying a damn thing about anything. We're saying, get your ass out. You have this amount of time. And we're looking at, you know, one thing that France has done when they were kicked out of a few places, they just tore shit up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm. They just went and just tore stuff up.
I know in Guinea was one place that they did that. They took everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The pipes, everything, you know. And I'm saying, no, you know, we're going to have folks with guns watching over your ass. I mean, I don't want, you know, I understand this is about war. And I understand the dynamics of war. But damn it, in this world, in this world, this continent is ours. It is Africans. It is nobody's but ours. There is not a place on the planet that we as Africans can go and stake that claim. We can't go to China. We can't go to Korea. We can't come. There is no place, as you know, Mickey, that we can go and say, well, you know, this is, we should have some of this too. No. The only place that we can declare independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty is on the continent of Africa. But our people have been trained to despise and to hate and to believe there is nothing in Africa for us.
We rather, you know, even getting people to travel to Africa, you know, it's sometimes hard, you know. But we're going to Greece, you know, we're going to Europe. We're going here, we're going there. I don't care about people going to those places. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to go home. I mean, that's got to be your first intended to go home, mm-hmm. you know, and see what's at home and see what we can do there at home, you know. So, because, I mean, you know, Africa, as you know, it's nothing but negative stuff about Africa. That's all we ever hear.
Right.
Negative stuff.
It's always going to be there because the European puts it out. The European puts it out.
I mean, I know for a fact growing up, the only thing I knew about Africa was Tarzan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we used to sit and watch and enjoy mm-hmm. Tarzan.
That's right.
You know, I mean, him.
It's a damn shame, ain't it? But I was with you.
Kicking people's asses, you know.
Yeah. I was with you.
We're rooting for Tarzan.
We're rooting for Tarzan.
That's the job that's been done on us. Mm-hmm. You know,
rooting for Jungo Jim, you know.
Yeah.
It's a damn shame, but it happened. We must recognize that it happened. We must purge ourselves from that mindset to make sure it never happens again. And we must educate ourselves. We must instill in us, in our hearts, in our minds, the greatness of African people. That's why, you know, for me, the embracing of ancient Kemet and embracing of what we have done as Africans, because the European tried to take everything. He's tried to take everything. In fact, I seen a more recent piece of Dr. Awas. I don't think he's the head of Egyptian antiquities anymore. I'm not sure if he is or not, but I know they have a new museum. But he's talking to this sister about who were the ancient who were they? And he's still saying, no, they were not African. No, they were not black. That's a damn lie. And he knows it. But once again, you know, you go with the lie. When you've perpetrated it so long and so much, it becomes truth in your mind. And you go with that lie. There's so much evidence now to prove otherwise. But yet they're still going to perpetuate that lie. Number one, because we're talking about the greatness of Africa and the greatness of African people. Because they wanted us to believe that we were running around a jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind or any worth. And of course, that's nothing is furthest from the truth. I don't know, Mickey, have you seen the documentary that I've been promoting, Great Pyramid K? 2019. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, that's the one that you turned me on to. That's the real long one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I watched it in pieces, but I did finally finish.
Right on. Yeah. And the guy said,
yeah.
You know, he said, we got to give Africa what is Africa. Just like they talk about render unto Caesar what is Caesar. We got to give to African what is African. They did this. And it wasn't no Greeks. It wasn't no Hebrews. It wasn't no mulattoes. It wasn't no aliens. It wasn't no Atlanteans. It was Africans, dark-skinned Africans, because it had to be dark-skinned because they're working in that damn sun all day. Mm-hmm. And how they built
it. Well, we have to continue to promote, shows like your show and others, because, like I said, I mean, one of the steps, of course, is to get the information out, to make our people understand. But then it's a matter of how do we get our people action. How do we actually fight this?
Right.
And I'm really now really trying to help develop. Young people to start, continuing this fight, as we get older,
right.
We really got to raise up a cadre of young people.
I agree.
To understand.
It is.
I tell them about things like books like Africa Must Unite, books like Capitalism and Slavery, book like Walter Rodney's book, How You Have Underdeveloped Africa. I mean, our young people have to be aware, if not those books, at least some modern version that's telling that same story, And I know now they like videos. They don't like to read nothing. I'm kind of in between about that. I still like to read stuff, but
right.
I understand
right.
videos and easy, they're really easy to access. But somehow, our young leaders, we've got to make sure that they're connected, because when we were coming up in the movement, the whole African liberation movement was something that was thriving. And so we had to know about
it. Right.
And Lumumba and people like that. I mean,
that's
we
right.
studied that stuff,
Mm-hmm.
But the young people today, I don't think are. And it's on us to make sure that they understand that history and what role they have to play in trying to unify Africa and the importance of, there's a lot of emphasis now on building black businesses and, I get that, but at the same time, we have to understand that we can't out-capitalist the capitalists, I mean, we're not trying to make a black Walmart.
Right.
Well, some people are, but that shouldn't be our goal.
And so, right.
So we've got, we have to really get our young people to understand the importance of not only unity, but unity around what? Unity around what? And it's got to be a revolutionary, progressive type unity that we have to try to embrace, and it's just like I said, it's a task.
It is,
but we cannot. I mean, it's just one we have to work on. We got to do it.
That's right.
We don't have a choice.
We don't. Either we do it or we perish. It's Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. That's the model of this program, brother. Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. There is no other answer to this. That's what's going to happen. Because if we don't, that's what's going to happen. I got a caller.
And I don't think our people see that.
No. Because number one, they're bombarded 24/7, 365 with all kind of BS on the television, in the magazines, on the newspapers, the fake news, as Trump like to call it. Man. 602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good afternoon, and good afternoon to your guests.
Hey, Brother Marcus. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, brothers. We may have to get behind our people and push them forward, because getting out in front of them with the mental state they're in right now, they'll shoot you in the back. So we have to get behind them and push them forward.
That's right.
Them, that's going to be worse than what the white man going to put on them. So look, if you don't move forward, I'm going to put something on you worse than what the white man going to do to you. That because that is how we got in this state, Oshi.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Brother Oshi? It wasn't, they didn't do it in love for us to get in this state. They used pain and death.
That's right.
To get us into the position we're in. And now we're in this quagmire trying to figure out, you know, and what to do. We're going to have to get behind them and push them forward.
Yes.
Because, like I say, if we get out there in the front, these Negroes will shoot you in the back.
They shoot you in the back, man.
You, because they get rewarded for bad behavior. No, in the 60s, when black people in Africa were moving, I mean, the elders told me, say, wow, man, in the 60s in Africa, we thought we were moving. Then what these Negroes do? They went ahead and then switch sides and started trading with the white man. See? Because they should have traded with us. Said, look, let us joint venture, okay? Whatever goods and services coming out of Africa, we will market it here for you in America. We will be your eyes and ears here in America. And what you do, you get the maximum price, because this is the best hustling ground right here. You know, America, New York, right? New York City, to be exact. So look, let us bring the goods here for you, right? We trade it here, we get market value, and then we ship back whatever goods and services you need. And there, we ship you the capital goods you need to manufacture, to build your manufacturing base in Africa. But no, they didn't do that. They flipped. I went and traded with the European, and this is the condition where we're in now. Again, back again behind the eight ball. But that is one way we can level the playing field by saying, look, let us joint venture together. Like what we did in we were trying to do in 1990, when Namibia got independence. And Samuel Jomo came to Harlem, to the state office building in Harlem, and appealed to black people, say, look, you help us get independence. Come now to Namibia and come and trade with us. Come and bring your talent and knowledge. Them Negroes turned their back. And I am a witness to that, Oshie, because I was in that movement. I was in that movement that saw those meetings that Jay can tell you about we had on 125th Street at Harriet Tubman School. See, when the nationalists, when we would come and say, all right, look, next week, we're having a nationalist meeting. We need everybody here. When they 1 week they bring the white man come, right? The auditorium full up with the white with black folks. They bring a white man in to speak. The next week we say, all right, we speak to the nationalists. You could count the people on your finger. You see? We got to stop that foolishness.
Yes.
Because we ain't, this time we're going down the drain. And the track we're going down the drain.
Yeah.
So we got to stop this madness. Anyway, Brother Washi, I'll miss you for a couple of weeks. But, you know.
I appreciate it. But I have Baba Baruti on Monday the 18th, man. So, you know, that's going to be a good program. So I hope you'll be able to listen. Okay, Brother Marcus.
All right, no problem, Brother
Washi. All right, peace to you. All right. Yeah, so, Brother Marcus, man. And now look at Namibia. Namibia is back in the hands of the Germans.
Yeah, they're talking about some reparatory justice there, some reparations, and they're, you know, the sisters and brothers are fighting there, so we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. And see, that's the thing about reparations, you know, I understand that reparations, I understand there's been some of our people in this country and other places because of what Europeans have done who have lived in abject poverty for generations. And I feel for them. But I believe reparations, and contained in the word reparations, is repair. Reparations is for us to be repaired. We need industry. We need schools. That's what reparations is for. You know, we need factories. We need farms. We need the equipment to repair our continent.
Land.
That's right.
Yeah.
Land. Mm-hmm. And I don't talk about land here. That's why, you know, I gave up on the Republic of New Africa. I love the brothers and sisters, but here in this country, you dealing with an open sworn enemy, an evil entity. In fact, white folks can't get a sovereignty in this country. You know, they can't declare themselves that in this country. The government will, you know, will come down on them. So I ain't talking about it. Give us some states. Damn that. You know, give us the wherewithal for us to go back home and to build. First, let's go do it.
And that's part of reparations demands, too, is the repatriation.
Right.
That's all right. Part of it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have to repatriate with the right mindset. That's key also.
Oh, definitely. Because if we do that like we did in Liberia, you know, that caused so much friction and so much division because those Negroes thought they were better than the Liberians because why? You know, they had been exposed to America and we're better. And then the Liberians thought they were better because why? We're real Africans and y'all just have breeds, you know, just foolishness. And that's why it never happened for them, you know. So all of these divisions, all of these fractions, all of these things that petty differences that divide us, we got to kick to the curb and move on. You know, in that article with Brother Andrews, there's a piece that he says, because some says, how do we prevent, he's given a prediction by the year 2100, the 22nd century. The majority of Africa's natural resources would have been depleted by foreign interests and its farmland either overused or in the hands of offshore investors. How do we prevent your prediction from coming true? He says, the answer to these questions belong to Africa itself. What has allowed for this process of economic stripping to take place for so long is Africans' lack of unity. If Africa,
That's it.
That's the bottom line answer. If Africa united, none of this would have happened. The fact that we're missing that strong sense of mass consciousness only fuels that division. Strong sense of African consciousness is what connects us, not only on the continent, but throughout the entire African diaspora. As much as we don't like the West in its many forms of white supremacy, we should be taking notes on the basis of white supremacy. Britain, Germany, France, the U.S., these countries have all agreed to set their differences aside and work together. That's right. They come together on everybody outside of them. They all win and Africa loses. We have to match that with a unified African consciousness that speaks for the best interests of Africa and Africans' global diaspora. If we're going to prevent such a prediction from coming true, our time is right now. Winnie Mandela, Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, Thomas Sankara, Amoco Cabral, and these Pan-African freedom fighters and their teachings are still relevant today. These leaders are definitely still relevant, and so is Pan-Africanism. They're probably looking down on us right now with love and saying, no, I think they're looking down on us. Hell, get your asses up. Get your asses up and get this together because you don't have time. Time is of the essence, you know?
Yeah. And the brother makes a distinction between the revolutionary Pan-Africanism and the bourgeois Pan-Africanism.
Right.
So that's an important distinction.
Yes, it is. I like that part.
In terms of Pan-Africanism. So that's an important point.
Yeah. Because, of course, the bourgeois Pan-Africanism, he wants the Pan-African, but he wants white approval. He wants European approval. He wants European assistance. See?
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, I think that their idea of what development is mirrors what we see going on in Africa now. And so a lot of times what they're looking for is enrichment of themselves, you know, just in a black form.
Right.
And so that's why we have to be careful about, you know, when we talk about Pan-Africanism, to make sure that we're talking about what Nkrumah talked about, and you notice how they say Winnie Mandela instead of Nelson Mandela. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
But that's what we have to turn to, that revolutionary Pan-African.
Yeah. Well, you know, Nelson, well, that's another subject for another time.
Yeah, that is.
But the bottom line is that that's what needs to happen. We need to have a cadre of leadership of brothers and sisters on the continent and in the diaspora And these men and women have agreed that we are going to come together and we're going to do far. We're going to close. We're going to find all ways because we have it within us. We have everything that we need. The only thing that we don't have is our right minds. And we're coming together to develop the mindset where we believe in ourselves and believe in each other and are willing to work hard with each other. And that no one is greater or better than others. This is not a system where one gets enriched at the expense of all others. This is a system.
And I think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and let me add this, brother. I think a good show would be, you know, I think we really should. And this is something that I've talked to our national chair in Black United Front about, is that we need to begin to try to make contact with the sisters and brothers on the continent who are of this mindset of the need for revolutionary Pan-Africanism, and to understand more about, because there is a burgeoning movement there. That much
yes.
I know.
Yes, you know, I do too.
I see bits and pieces of it.
Right.
But we need to try to see how we can connect with those sisters and brothers and see what we can do to support them and support their efforts. And so that's one of the things I'm looking for, is what's happening on the continent, on the ground, with brothers and sisters, and can they begin to unite themselves on the continent? Mm-hmm. You know, forget about those country boundaries, et cetera, but
right.
begin to unite themselves on the continent.
Exactly.
That's what I'm really looking for. I think that's our hope.
Our best hope
is young sisters and brothers on the continent who beginning to understand and throw off the yokes of neocolonialism.
Yeah, because I met some in Ghana. I met some in Ghana. But to me, the further you know, you go, then it starts to wane. People start to get discouraged because they have that feeling, they have that spark, and then nothing's happening, you know. And so, not me, not you. We're people who can sit back and help and advise or whatever. But there's those young people, those people who have that fire, the people who can articulate the situation. You know, and for them to go out and to gather up all those other young brothers and sisters, you know, and to begin to meet on a regular basis, to begin to assign duties with timelines to make sure that they're done, and to begin to develop programs and to begin to say, hey, we're going to pull our resources and start. You know, what's the most important thing for us, to me, is building schools so we can learn how to do things, building schools, not just to teach you, you know, reading, writing. No, to teach you how to be a mason, to teach you how to be an electrician, teach you how to be a plumber, teach you how to lay bricks, teach you how to, you know, build roads, highways, seaports, airports.
And the technology.
Yes. You know, just like I said earlier, Dr. Clark said, he said, we must develop this dynamic Pan-Africanism. This dynamic Pan-Africanism will be comprised of excuse me. It will be comprised of lost my train of thought just a minute ago. He said it'll be comprised of culture, technology, and spirituality. Our culture. I read that piece earlier, and I read that piece periodically, Lord Macaulay, whatever the hell his name is, his address to the British Parliament, talking about what he'd seen when he first touched down in Africa. And then he said, I never seen a beggar. The people, you know, there's never a poverty. The people were so strong. I never thought that we could take them. But once we implanted into their mind that Britain was better than what you have, our religion is better than what you have, it destroyed them, their self-esteem, and we took their culture. We made them abandon their culture and to embrace us.
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. See, so we have work to do. There's no doubt about it. And I appreciate you all the time sending me good stuff, you know, and I know that. In fact, I talked to Brother Kofi, and how's he doing?
Kofi's doing well. They're doing some good work down in Houston.
Good. I know, do they have the caravan coming up, don't they?
Yeah, the caravan is coming up in
a couple weeks. A
week or two.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing it this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, those pieces that I send out, I really try to focus on and some of the younger folks, you know, because I know we appreciate that stuff, you know, people in our age group, but I'm really trying to get our young people to understand, you know, this is their task now. You know, they're the ones that's got to take this up.
That's right. We're passing this baton, and we're giving you all, and we're trying to provide you all the information that you need. And all the support that you need, but you got to take this baton, and you got to take it to the next level. It has to be done. You got to do it, and you got to do it now. No procrastination, no waiting. It has to be done now. Our future is not guaranteed, and it's tenuous at best. We got some people that are running this world that are some evil ass people. I mean, evil. You know,
very evil and destructive.
And destructive. And they will do whatever it takes for them to maintain their position of dominance and control.
Absolutely.
You know, that's why I'm saying that we send a delegation to these world bookings saying, here's the history. This is what happened. This is what happened through our colonies. We're saying it's over. It's done. You did what you did. And now we are reclaiming our stuff. We're reclaiming our stuff. It ain't about no damn battle. It ain't about no damn, yes, it may come to that, but so what? But we're saying, I know that we are on the side of what is right. I know you don't recognize right or wrong. I don't give a damn about that, but I'm telling you, we're on the side, and we're moving in that direction with our people. We're reclaiming and recapturing, restoring our land, but more importantly, our minds. We're taking back our minds. Brother Mickey, I appreciate you, my brother. You have a good...
Always a pleasure, Brother Osha. Always a pleasure, and man. I appreciate what you're doing with this show.
All right, my brother. You have a good day, man. Peace to you.
Okay.
We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D. But the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a wonderful day, my brothers and sisters. I'll see you on the 18th with Baba Baruti. See you on the 18th with Baba Baruti, okay? All right, family.